This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Reeve Lindbergh grew up in the big shadow cast by her famous parents, Anne and Charles Lindbergh. Her father, a famous aviator, also became famous because the first child of Charles and Anne was kidnapped and later found dead. Charles Lindbergh later went on to more notoriety for his stance of isolationism during World War II and before it. And Reeve has spent her life coming to terms with all the ways the outside interest in her family's life has crept into her own. Her new book of personal essays, Two Lives, explores that sometimes uneasy balance. Reeve Lindbergh came by the studios recently to talk about her book, and I asked her to read a passage.
I often think I live two lives, one in the foreground and the other in the background, each life taking its turn. I have a real or normal life in the country, where my husband and I live on an old farm at the end of a dirt road. We wear comfortable clothes, write books, raise sheep and chickens, are active in community life, and welcome our children and grandchildren whenever they come to visit. There is also an entirely different Lindbergh life, which requires putting on somewhat less comfortable clothes and traveling to places away from the farm, where I attend meetings and give talks. In this second life, I stand up in front of groups of people and talk a little about the books I have written for children and adults, and a lot about the lives of my late parents, Charles A. and Anne Morrow Lindbergh. Maybe it's a strange way to live, coming and going and switching focus completely between one life and the other, moving from the present to the past, not even my own past, but my parents, and back again. Still, I've done this for so long that it feels like just another part of my routine, like going to the farmer's market or taking one of the dogs to the vet. One of the chief differences is that in my Lindbergh life, there are different questions to answer. Instead of, how long has she been limping? Or, do you want a bag for that? It's, what is your favorite memory of your father? Or, did your mother teach you to write? Or, what can you tell us about the kidnapping? Or, did your father really have other families? These questions are now so familiar that they don't trouble me much, though I can remember when some of them did.
The questions about your family and your father used to bother you, and they don't anymore. What changed?
They don't bother me so much. I think it's mainly because of repetition, because in learning as much as I could or in becoming familiar with everything about the lives of my parents that I was able to become familiar with, I lost that sense of difference or strangeness or, maybe not the strangeness sometimes, but I lost the sense of it being alien to me. And so perhaps in a way that weaves the two lives together.
It seems like you're also trying to bring your famous family's life into that mundane sphere as well. You know, you write that you would like people to sort of see your parents as real people. You talk about your father's toothbrush, you know, this idea that your parents were people and your father was this person who was just as boring as he was interesting.
Yes, he was. He was just as boring as he was interesting. That's very true.
But then I was interested by that because those questions that people do ask are often hard ones. So questions about your father's other families or questions about his isolationist stance and whether he was an anti-Semite and difficult things that I can imagine you might have to in some way remove yourself from your intimate life with them in order to not be defensive in your answers. But also, this is your family. These are
your parents. My family. And it is very difficult, or has been very difficult. And in order to come to terms with those difficulties, I have to both embrace my family history, my parents. This is who they were. This is how it was. And I also have to have a little distance. I don't think I could have written this way if my parents were still living, especially him. He had, I think, sealed himself off in so many ways from public scrutiny that it would have been very hard for him to have me writing about what I thought about his speeches or what I thought about the families. I don't think he ever thought we would meet the families. And I had no idea, still have no idea what was going on in his mind and heart and so forth when that all began. But there's so much I just don't get about my father. And I try. And I learn. I learned quite a bit about him. And I loved him. Mm-hmm. You know, that's – there I am. That's I'm in that place. And I can't just say, oh, he was a creep or he was a hero or he was this or that. This is my father. And you have to find a way to come to terms with that.
Is this book, Two Lives, in some ways a little bit – you're very gentle, but a gentle rebuke in the sense that – you do write about meeting your half-siblings mm-hmm. and what that experience was like. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine people who have followed the Lindbergh story are sort mm-hmm. of eating that up. Oh, I want to hear about that. And yet you're also saying, this is what life is like with my chickens. This is what, you know. So it's almost
probably.
Like if you're going to listen to that, you have to see me as a real person too.
That perhaps. I didn't think of it as a rebuke. I mainly think of this as – this kind of writing that I do is something that I do for myself to find out what I'm thinking and to follow it. I remember meeting my one of the half-brothers whom I dearly love, and the two of us were walking in the rain near where he lived in a little village in Switzerland, and we were just so mad at our father. We were so mad, I was angry because there was secrecy and there was pain and there was difficulty for all these people, and they weren't allowed to say they didn't even know who their father was, and he thought it was outrageous that there was this relationship with two sisters he had known. I mean, he and his sort of half-siblings, cousins, whatever they were, they all grew up together. They knew they were related, but they didn't really know who their father was. And, he was mad about that. We were both so mad. But we really enjoyed each other's company, and we had this tremendous bond, you know, that we had these mothers we loved and this impossible father. And I enjoyed that very much. And then I met, toward the end of my travel in Europe, I met his brother, another half-brother, who just smiled as I came in the door and said, "Here I am, Reeve, the last Goldberg variation." He was the last Lindbergh European sibling that I met. And they're very funny and very, very sophisticated, very charming people. I enjoyed them a lot.
Well, there's something universal about being able to be angry at your shared parent. Right?
That's right.
That's good sibling bonding,
right
there.
We both absolutely were very bonded, and we felt the story is so bizarre that there are very few people we can talk to about it. But I can talk to him, and he can talk to me. And it's funny. I did start out full of indignation, just so angry, and then it just changed because you have to lead your life and take your kids to school and figure out what you're doing next with your work or this or that.
Right, your real life.
You have to lead a real life in the midst of however strange the circumstances may be.
And your father was dead at this point, right?
He was dead at this point.
So you couldn't tell him how angry
I could not tell him how angry. I have no idea what I would have said to him, and I can't imagine what he would have said in return. It's just people say, "Is there anything you'd like to ask your father?" I think, "Oh boy, yes."
Yes, well, that would be a conversation that other people would like to hear as well. Your writing style, Reeve, is so conversational and casual. And as I was reading, I was wondering how hard you have to work to make it so, or if that's really just your very natural style of writing is casual and conversational and intimate.
I think so. I think it's pretty much my natural style of writing. I don't know for sure, but I know when my mother was with us in Vermont the last 2 years of her life, and she was dying, and she was very kind of drifty. You know, she had some dementia through strokes. We were doing our best, and we had the group of Buddhist caregivers, wonderful people who helped to take care of her, and the editor from Simon & Schuster that I had been working with over the years called and said, "Now, what are you working on?" And I said, "Well, I don't think I'm working on anything. I keep a journal. My mother's here, and she's having a really hard time." And he said, "Well, I want to see that." And I thought, what am I going to do? And then I typed up what I had written for the last couple of months, and he said, "That's a book, and you should continue, and we will publish it." And I was really surprised because I thought that my writing was something that I sort of worked hard at and crafted. And I thought my journal was just kind of a dumping ground. And it struck me that that has never been true. I've always written the way I talk or used to write letters. Now I'd say probably write more emails than letters. But it seems to be that conversational writing, it's easiest for me, or it flows. It continues to flow.
But you do say that this is how you process things, by writing them down and writing through them. That's the only way, really,
to
figure out what you're thinking.
I think that seems to be the way I work things out. And somebody, might have been my mother, said I write to find out what I think. And she always would encourage us to write things down. If there was something that bothered you, or if there was something you were thinking about, or if you said something about if she were driving and I saw something in the trees or a landscape and I'd say something and she would say, write that down, Reeve. When you get home, write that down. And I understood that that was her way of living as well.
A lot of the essays talk about aging, other people's passing or health questions. Mm-hmm. You write about your husband's health. You write about the death of a butterfly. You talk about your mother's long death.
I do.
And now you're facing that. You write about your eyelashes and how that reminds you of your own mortality.
That's right. Well, you know, I'm in my 70s now, and I think about, oh, my gracious, you know, I guess I'm getting old now, and I should – what do I do? What do I wear? You know, how do
– And where did my eyelashes go?
And where did my eyelashes go? I think I used to have eyelashes. Well, you just have to get used to it, I guess. You just get – and we have so many different – periods in our lives, and we don't worry about that. Well, maybe we do when we're going from 8 to 9 to 10 to 12. We do a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, it's hard to remember back then.
It's really hard to remember, but there are periods when we think, oh, you know, I'm getting into a new decade. You know, suddenly you think you're really, really old. I think the oldest I ever thought I was when I turned 26, and suddenly I was more than a quarter century in age, and that was pretty scary. But now at 72, I think, well, you know, I'm still here. I'm still having a good time. I can't find my eyelashes, but
they've migrated.
They have migrated, yes. Gone to Florida. Right.
Well, any advice for me? My next birthday, I'll be 40.
Oh, that's a wonderful, wonderful age. You'll feel so young once you get through that birthday of reaching 40. You're going to think, this is really fun.
Good.
Yeah, you'll be absolutely fine. I guarantee it.
You write that you used to not feel your family, not feel your parents when you visited historical spaces or visited with objects that they once possessed, or like seeing the planes at the Air and Space Museum, that you didn't feel anything. And now you do. You feel your parents in those spaces.
Yes, I do. Perhaps because they are no longer with me here on this earth. And so when I go to visit the airplanes, which I like to do once a year or so, I find things, partly because the archivists and curators at the National Air and Space Museum are so good at finding little things, little cans of food and somebody found a pressed flower that my mother had found on one of those trips that they took over the North Pole to Asia. And she was could it have been Greenland? She was in one of the places where she stopped, and she had found a beautiful little bit of plant or something, and she was able to press between the pages of a book, and someone found that and told me about it, and it was just so like her. And so I do. I look for the personal. I think perhaps as a child you don't like those things that take your famous parents out of the normal family life. You don't like those airplanes and those flying suits and, you know, those sextants and compasses and all those things that are in the glass cases or hanging up in a museum. And now I feel as if, oh, there they are, these young people who became my parents. And it is a recognition kind of thing. So I'm always trying to join these two lives, aren't I? I'm always trying to pull them together because that's where I think they belong.
Well, I appreciated that in the book. And we've talked a lot about your relationship to your writing and to your family. But I also appreciated the essays about your chickens and about the parts of life that just feel like your life. And I enjoyed reading that part of the book and how you made those flow from one essay to another. So thank you. It was really a pleasure to read this book.
I'm so glad you feel that way, Jane. That's just wonderful.
Reeve Lindberg's new book of essays is called Two Lives. She's doing readings and signings all over the region right now, including one in North Conway, New Hampshire, tomorrow night at White Birch Books, and Saturday afternoon in Barrie, Vermont at Next Chapter Bookstore. And we have a link to her readings where you'll find details. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition.